Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here for our weekly show on Bridie on TV called The Tenpenny Files on Your Health. For the last 23 years or so, I've given literally thousands of interviews on radio, TV, podcasts, live conferences, and seminars, and almost all my information in one way or another is about vaccines. But with decades of medical training and experience behind me, there's so many other things that I want to discuss. So this is an educational show where I want to bring you information on your health. My special guest, Jeffrey Smith, is an expert in genetically modified foods and all kinds of other things that have to do with this nasty agricultural industry that he's been swimming in for like 27 years. He has authored two best-selling books. He's a director of five documentaries and more. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. As a global thought leader for over 27 years on the health dangers of food genetically altered by genes of other organisms, referred to as GMOs, Jeffrey Smith has authored two bestsellers, has directed award-winning documentaries, which are beautiful, by the way, has delivered more than 2,000 lectures and interviews in 45 countries, and has trained more than 1,500 speakers, and has organized more than 10,000 grassroots advocates. Jeffrey has counseled world leaders on six continents with his meticulous research. His presentations at medical conferences would blow you away, because I've heard many of them over the years, and they've inspired thousands of integrated doctors to prescribe non-GMO organic diets. The success of the anti-GMO education movement he pioneered has resulted in at least 40% of the world consumers now recognizing that genetic modification is unhealthy, and probably worse than unhealthy. It's really horrible for us and the environment. Jeffrey, through his organization, the Institute for Responsible Technology, is now sounding the alarm about GMO 2.0, the next level of manipulating nature. Jeffrey, my friend, so good to see you again, and welcome to the Tenpenny Files on Your Health.
Oh, it's great to see you again, Sherry. We were on a cruise together speaking. We've been on so many conferences together for these decades. It's just great to connect again.
It really is, and I'm so glad to have you here for this month of the drtenpenny.com for our is on Food is Medicine. So I can't think of anything more important than what they're doing to our food to make it non-medicinal. So I want to start with, you know, I told him a little short story before we went live here about that I was going to write a little short article on bioengineered ingredients that I found on a package, which I wasn't real sure what that was. So as you guys know that have been following me for a while, I do a blog called Eye on the Evidence on Saturdays. And I was going to write that as one of my blog posts. But as I started digging into it and started researching it, my 2,000-word blog post, a Substack article, turned into a 44-page paper. It's just, and I know I barely scraped the surface on what Jeffrey knows about all of this. And so let's start with, because one of the things I found really confusing as I was reading all this material is the difference between genetic engineering, genetic modification, and gene editing. What's the difference between those terms that is used in that literature?
It's a good question. And we're going to learn during this hour that you want to stay away from anything related to any of those terms, that they're linked to a large number of diseases, and that switching to non-GMO and in particular organic food has demonstrated dramatic recoveries from many of those diseases. But genetic engineering and genetic modification, according to the activists, has always meant the same thing: laboratory techniques where you alter the DNA in ways that can't be done naturally. The biotech industry has a massive disinformation campaign. So what they did is they tried to convince people, oh, genetic modification is any way that you change genes. Beer, yeast, all that is considered genetic modification, crossbreeding. So some people go with the term genetic modification, meaning any change with genes, and genetic engineering more is what you do in the laboratory. I refer to both. So genetically modified organisms are those with the laboratory techniques. Now, originally, you would genetically engineer by taking a gene gun, which had millions of little particles of tungsten or gold and coated with genetic constructs, and shoot it into a plate of cells, hoping that some of the genes would make it into the DNA of some of those cells. Or you infected those cells with bacteria that had been stuffed with your genes. The process was random. It created massive collateral damage. People didn't check all the damage that was created. And even after food that was put on the market for consumption, independent studies showed that the collateral damage increased allergens, increased things like putrescine and cadaverine, horrible stuff. And that's just the side effects of the process of genetic engineering. So then comes along gene editing, including CRISPR. Most people have heard of the word CRISPR and don't know what it means. In this case, you have a little molecular scissors that cuts the DNA, and you have a little guide that tells the scissors where to cut. So instead of blasting it in at random, you hunt for a spot on the DNA with a little template, and you cut in that area, and then hope that when the cell repairs itself, it looks like what you designed. You have no control over how the cell repairs itself completely, and it turns out that there's massive collateral damage there too. On our site, responsibletechnology.org, we have a 6-minute animated journey into the DNA called 7 Reasons Why Gene Editing is Dangerous and Unpredictable. And we talk about how it can cause shattering of the chromosomes, deletions, additions, mutations, epigenetic effects that could last for 10 generations or more. And it doesn't require always taking genes from other species. It could be knocking out a gene within that species, which is always, in our mind, one of the categories of GMO. But the biotech industry had been pummeled by the information that we got out around the world and others, and GMOs were becoming very unpopular, fortunately. So they came and approached all of these governments and said, gene editing, it's not a GMO, because it doesn't involve genes transferred from other species. In fact, it uses something that's completely natural. Well, they borrowed something from bacteria and viruses and they're doing it in ways that are completely unnatural. They say, oh, it's very natural. And it's only doing things that could be done naturally. And it's precise. And it's predictable. Complete lies. Therefore, it should be treated as breeding. And you don't regulate breeding. So you shouldn't regulate gene editing. And one by one, as one country said, okay, they would say, look, these other countries, they're doing it, you're falling behind. And then they would deregulate it. So the United States, Canada, the UK, Japan, Argentina, Brazil, Australia, India, they've deregulated one or more versions of gene editing, sometimes just for plants, sometimes for plants and animals, and sometimes for plants, animals, and microorganisms, as we'll learn later, are the most dangerous kingdom to genetically engineer, which could completely wipe us out. Now, what's interesting in the United States is if you use gene editing, you can introduce that product into the food without telling the government and without telling your consumers. And CRISPR is now so cheap and easy to gene edit, it costs less than $2,000 for a lab. You can buy your own lab. In fact, schools more and more are instituting gene editing as part of assignments to the students in biology class. So unless we stop it, there will be millions upon millions of genetically engineered microorganisms produced and released by high school students, let alone the college students and the research and the companies. And gene editing means that we can now change the nature of nature on purpose or by accident. And once you release a GMO, you cannot recall it. So this advent of unregulated, inexpensive gene editing can flood our food supply with unlabeled, very dangerous foods, extremely dangerous, deadly, potentially. Not all of them, but some. And could end up replacing nature incrementally, because there's a gene rush going on. Let's create the new grasshopper. Let's create the new mosquito. Let's create the new grass. Let's find problems to solve or make nature better, because we want to get our patented organism out there in the marketplace so we can make money before the patent expires. Now, with this gene rush, it means that anything with DNA is up for grabs. And there was an indigenous wise person that told a friend of mine in the early 90s that around this time in this century, we would face the prospect of ending biological evolution as we know it. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. Where,
you know, it's interesting that you say that there's all these countries in the world that, because China, you know, always stealing everybody's technology and everything, had not allowed genetically modified seed in its country because they thought it was so dangerous. But now the big companies have convinced them that gene editing is different and safer and it's okay. And so now they too are rolling over and saying, okay, well, we can do that because it's so specific and so actually just one little gene thing. And because we know it's so specific, it's not dangerous. And it's a big fat lie.
Yeah, probably the biggest battlefront right now is the EU. There's a vote coming up to deregulate gene editing, to treat it differently than GMOs. And I get all the articles and the petitions and everything, and scientist after scientist, independent ones, are lining up saying it's a lie. It's a complete falsehood. If you gene edit, you can end up with, you know, toxins, allergens, carcinogens, changed nutrients. And unless you evaluate carefully all the elements of your final organism, you could be putting things into the environment or into the food supply that could have ramifications that will go on as long as that species goes on, because it's self-propagating.
And it creates a new species, doesn't it? Pardon? Doesn't it really, this whole genetic modification, genetic engineering, gene editing, at the end of the day, haven't we created a new species?
Oh, yeah.
Because we messed up their DNA, right?
Nobel Prize winner George Wald said, before genetic engineering was commercialized, he said, we shouldn't mistake genetic engineering for natural breeding. What we're doing is overnight creating new organisms that were not part of the billions of years of evolution. So we are recreating new streams of evolution every time we use that CRISPR kit. And when we put it out in the environment, you cannot recall it. And so all future generations are going to be dealing with the folly of this generation. And there's one thing that's sobering. The most common result of genetic engineering is surprise side effects. And you'll see in the movie, Seven Reasons Why Gene Editing is Dangerous and Unpredictable, specific examples showing how gene editing has failed to be precise, safe, and predictable.
You know, we've had these GMOs and these you know, 100% of soy, about 100% of maize.
Not 100% of soy. Let's be clear, because some people will have like the soy products in health food stores. Most of that is non-GMO. And it'll say non-GMO on it. It'll say non-GMO on it. But I mean, like, so let's say 94% of the soy may be genetically engineered. But there's enough there for the marketplace right now that is looking for the non-GMO. Most of it's used for animal feed, some for biodiesel. Same with corn. There still is some small amount of non-genetically engineered corn. Same with canola. But it's a small percentage.
Yeah, well, that leads me to a question I was going to ask you later, but this is a good place to interject this. I read an article on genewatch.org. And the title of the article was Time to End Genetically Modified, Genetically Engineered, Herbicide Tolerant Crops.
Crops.
So, and they said, because none of the promises that they had sold this have delivered. It doesn't increase yield. It hasn't decreased the amount of glyphosate use. In fact, if anything, glyphosate is used more. I mean, I found a series of maps that showed it from the 60s up till now, and it was just incredible. So my question then is, if that were to happen, if by the magic wand, suddenly all the governments and all the big companies woke up and said, oh my gosh, what did we do? We're going to stop. Is there enough good seed, uncontaminated seed to start over? And because we've got so much like developed like herbicide resistant bugs and herbicide resistant plants, I found a website on herbicide glyphosate tolerant and resistant weeds. It's, you probably know what it is. And it was just, it was a well done website, and it was, but it was massive, like of how many different weeds around the world have become completely resistant now to so much glyphosate, which then also gets into our food supplies. Could we start over? Could we go back to eliminating all of these things?
Well, the answer is yes, but let me catch up the audience a bit, because you and I have been talking about the word glyphosate for a while. But let me deconstruct it. Glyphosate was originally patented as a descaler chemical to clean industrial boilers and pipes because it grabs onto minerals. It is a chelator. And when they cleaned the boilers and they put the chemical onto the ground, it killed all the plants. So Monsanto bought it and patented it as an herbicide. And they put it into something called Roundup. That's one name of many that contain glyphosate. They put a lot of other poisons in, but the primary poison is glyphosate. Now, their patent was going to expire in the year 2000. So they created genetically engineered Roundup-ready crops, engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup. If you spray Roundup on a field of soybeans that are not genetically engineered, you'll kill all the soybeans. But if it's genetic, if it's Roundup ready soybeans, it'll kill all of the other plant biodiversity, weeds, but the soy will remain, and it'll be a completely clean field, and it's easier to weed. You don't have to go with a hoe, you don't have to spot spray. So you can actually spray by airplane or big combine. And they sold seeds to farmers saying, if you buy our Roundup ready seeds, you'll only buy our Roundup. So it was a way to extend their dominance in Roundup herbicide. Now, the amount of Roundup that's been used is vast. It's like 300 million pounds in the United States each year. And Roundup is more dangerous than glyphosate alone. And between the two of them, they're linked to nearly all diseases that are popular and devastating. So they're linked. I have charts that we could show some other time, but and if you look at these disease rates, they go up at a certain angle, the same angle as the use of glyphosate-based herbicides on soy and corn. We have inflammatory bowel disease, death, obesity, anxiety, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, hypertension, autism, insomnia, celiac disease, kidney injury and failure, all sorts of cancers. The World Health Organization declared it a class 2A carcinogen. Deaths from intestinal infection, deaths from lipoprotein metabolism disorders, peritonitis, hepatitis C, dementia, senile dementia, ADHD, all these things, all these birthdays. I mean, I have all these charts that are from peer-reviewed published articles showing the correlation. But it's not just correlation, because that doesn't prove causation. We actually have evidence. I've surveyed 3,256 people who got better from 28 different conditions when they switch to non-GMO and largely organic foods. And it's many of these same disorders and diseases getting better substantially. And the number one improvement is always digestion, 85.2% in our survey. So it's we have personal reports, we have clinical evidence. Doctors tell us that their patients get better from these things. Veterinarians say that pets get better. We have animal feeding studies showing that when the animals are fed either the GMOs alone or the glyphosate-based herbicides or the two together, they suffer from these diseases or their precursors. So it's not just Roundup, it's a double whammy. And then we actually have plausible causative pathways. So insomnia, for example, skyrocketed with the increase in glyphosate. Why would that be? People know that melatonin helps with sleep. Melatonin is converted from serotonin, which is produced in the gut by L-tryptophan. The L-tryptophan is produced by the gut bacteria through a shikimate pathway, which glyphosate shuts down. So if you don't have enough L-tryptophan, you don't have enough serotonin, you don't have enough melatonin, poof, you have insomnia. Well, it turns out I'm looking at the results of my survey right over here, 33.2% of our respondents said that their insomnia improved when they switched to non-GMO and organic foods. We have the biochemical pathway. Same with cancer. We see the pathway. So your question is relevant. What would happen if we banned glyphosate herbicides, Roundup Ready herbicides? Well, first of all, it's important to know that it's in the food supply, not just on the Roundup Ready crops. I think it was about 17 years ago, 18 years ago, Monsanto started to tell farmers who grew grains and beans, spray just before harvest. It'll dry down, it'll fast ripen your grains, it'll kill the weeds for next year, and it'll be easier to harvest. So it's sprayed on oats, which are non-GMO, but oats just absorb it like a sponge. And unless you buy organic oats, you're just having more glyphosate than you would if you had Roundup Ready soybeans. It's sprayed on wheat, it's sprayed on lentils, mung beans, etc. You can go to our site, responsibletechnology.org, and we have a database of all the foods and what their residue levels are.
You know, I want to just interject here for just a second about the word organic, because in part of my research, as I was researching for my 2,000-word blog.
2,000-word, 44-page blog.
Yes,
That's a book.
That organic is also another one of those deceptive terms. Because if it says organic, just organic, they can have up to 30% non-organic stuff in it.
Right.
But it has to
It
has to be labeled 100% organic for it to be organic, 100% organic, right?
Almost. I'm going to do a slight correction, but you're almost there. Because this is what I talk about all the time, and you did better than almost anyone.
You've got 90 seconds to clear this up, and then right. We're going to take a break.
If it says 100% organic, that's what it is. If it says organic, it has to be at least 95% organic, and the other 5% have to be non-GMO. If it says made with organic blank, made with organic ingredients, made with organic soy, then 70% minimum organic, and the other 30% have to be non-GMO. And
is it specifically about non-GMO, or is it just other like chemicals and stuff?
No. Only if it's the 70, the 95, the other piece can't be GMO, but it doesn't have to be organic. And it doesn't have to have the spray. It can have sprays of things that are prohibited.
I think that's really, really important to iterate that again, Jeffrey, for our listening audience, because I think that's one of the most important takeaways here. But as we go into the break, and then we've got really important things to talk about after the break, but say that again about 100% organic versus using organic stuff.
Yeah, 100% organic means it's 100%. 95%, if it says organic, then 95% have to be organic, and 5% don't have to be, can't be GMO. I don't know what else is banned in that 5%. Frankly, to come to think of it, I don't know if it can use atrazine and other things. I should find out. I'll find out and let you know. And if it says made with organic blank, made with organic ingredients, made with organic soy, then it has to be at least 70% organic and the rest have to be non-GMO. So that's important. And the answer is yes, we could end up creating the seeds to replace a GMO harvest, but it would take some seasons because you have to grow them a place like Hawaii three times a year, just build out the number of seeds, then we'd have it. Do we have it tomorrow? No, but we can. That's how we ended up creating the GMOs in the first place. We created the seeds and built them out. Now we would do the non-GMO.
So we're going to take a quick commercial break here. I want you to stay tuned with Jeffrey Smith for the Institute for Responsible Technology.org. We're talking about GMOs and how bad they are. Right after the break, we're going to come back and talk about genetically modified organisms, which is the problem for our generation. So stick around. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero. It could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to our show here tonight. On the 10 Penny Files on Your Health, we're having a really interesting conversation with Jeffrey Smith from the, and all of the things that we're talking about are genetically modified food. So far, we've been talking about organic versus what does it mean to be 100% organic. We want to talk a little bit about, Jeffrey and I talked about this offline, about genetically modified microbiology, microorganisms, and what they're doing with that. And I just think that partly of one of the things of what you said, Jeffrey, about, you know, kids in high schools can just use CRISPR kits and just make anything. Tell us a little bit about this problem that you've identified. And I also want to ask you about, is this part of GMO 2.0? Is knowing about that two separate things?
Now, 2.0 is a big umbrella term that refers to gene editing. It refers to the RNAi spray that was just approved, which if it gets on your skin, might reprogram your own genetic DNA production. It talks about the gene drives that can completely wipe out species, AI mixed with gene editing. All these things can compromise GMO 2.0. But among all of the things, I think the most dangerous, and this is probably, in my mind, the greatest existential threat faced by the planet, but it may not be the greatest, but it's certainly class A, and that is genetically engineering microorganisms. We know from COVID they can travel and mutate, and you can't bring them back. But we also know that microbes swap genes with other microbes. And they do this regularly, and it's part of how they adjust and evolve so quickly. Now, if you genetically engineer a microorganism and put in a gene that, or create a gene that's never co-evolved with humans or the environment, and you release it, and it survives, it could end up in thousands of different types of microorganisms in tens of thousands of ecosystems, including the human body and all sorts of places where the microorganisms survive and live in us. Now, that could undermine the functioning of these microbiomes or microbe communities. And when we have dysbiosis in our own microbiome, in other words, imbalances or the wrong critters, we may end up getting disease. In fact, some scientists say that up to 80% of all human disease is trackable to changes in the microbiome.
Wow.
In the soil, it's even more complex. The soil produces the plants through the microorganism interaction at the roots and mycorrhizal fungi networks between plants and between trees. If that gets screwed up, then it can hurt terrestrial plants. Algae produces most of the world's oxygen. So the microorganisms give us breath. The carbon cycle, the carbon gets drawn out of the air because of the microorganisms in the soil. That can get blocked. And we're flooding now the biosphere with genetically engineered microorganisms. Just two companies may already have their genetically engineered bacteria on up to 43 million farm acres. We have all of these high school students that are producing. We also have something called synthetic biology, where you take a gene, let's say you want to produce an opium medicine, an opiate, opioid. You take, let's say, a gene from the poppy, and you put it into yeast or bacteria, and then it produces a particular protein. It produces something that you're looking for. Then you purify that and sell that as a drug.
Wow.
And so instead of growing natural things, they can genetically engineer yeast or bacteria to produce vanilla, to produce CBD, to produce Ayurvedic herb, quote, active ingredients. And if that escapes into the environment and then ends up being digested, and then it transfers that gene into our gut bacteria, we may be producing opium, CBDs, industrial enzymes that were supposed to be just contained in the fermentation vats, but can end up inside us or on fields or in infants, etc. Now, if they don't purify it completely, if there's some spillage of the DNA into the final product, even if it's naked DNA, that could get picked up and integrated by our gut bacteria, and we could end up being a factory to produce B vitamins, which are produced this way, to produce, as I said, opioids, to produce all these things. So they're flooding the environment on farm fields. They're flooding the environment accidentally through academia. They're even genetically engineering probiotics and medicines to give to people. And once you release it, it becomes part of the cycle of nature. And I'm going to give you two quick examples that are in our film, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, at responsibletechnology.org. Elaine Ingham, who's a friend of mine, told me she was a professor at Oregon State University, and one of her PhD candidates was doing research on genetically engineered microorganisms, particularly one that was designed to turn plant matter into alcohol. And the well-meaning scientists were going to distribute it to farmers all over the United States and all over the world. So instead of the farmers burning their crops after harvest, they'd rake it up and put it into big tanks with this genetically engineered bacteria. 2 weeks later, open the spigot at the bottom, out would come alcohol to power their tractors or sell for profit. And then they were going to be instructed to take the nutrient-rich sludge at the bottom and spread it on their fields as fertilizer. Well, the graduate student accidentally found out that if they had taken this nutrient-rich sludge and spread it on their fields, the fields would have become sterile, because he was growing wheat in the soil that was mixed with this genetically engineered bacterium, and it died. It turned the wheat to alcohol, just slime on the surface compared to the controls. And they were about to release the genetically engineered bacterium outdoors to see how far it would travel. And the EPA whistleblowers who approached Dr. Elaine Ingham after she went public with this near travesty said, we did a secret study and found that genetically engineered bacteria travel throughout the world. It's everywhere. We released some in a field in Louisiana. We found it everywhere. So the bacteria that they genetically engineered is found on every root structure on Earth, in dirt. And if this one had a survival advantage, which it probably does because it would kill off its parent, because the parent doesn't survive in terms of alcohol, And if it were able to take over the niche, I said, what could be the downside of that, Dr. Ingram? And she said, it could end terrestrial plant life.
Oh my gosh.
And we were 2 weeks away. So that was an example. You can read about it or watch it. Watch her say that at Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. And in the same film, we talk about another ice minus, a genetically engineered bacterium that was going to be used to stop frost damage on strawberries and potatoes. But it was the bacteria that was also airborne that creates rain and snow and sleet. And they were creating an impotent version. And if that became the dominant species, it could alter weather patterns. Those were two genetically engineered microorganisms from the last century that could have created cataclysms simply doing what they were intended to do.
Wow.
Now remember, that's not including the fact that they could swap their genes with other microbes, not including the fact that there could be other changes in the microorganism that were never evaluated that could become the dominant species. And then when you think about our gut bacteria is so important. Milk digesting microbes enter the birth canal in the second trimester to inoculate the baby. The first microbes out of the milk take out the oxygen from the gut to create an anaerobic environment for the gut bacteria. More bacteria come out of the breast and from the nipple for the baby. A lot of the milk is unedible, undigestible by the baby. It's not designed for the baby. It's designed to feed the microbiome that is being developed in the baby. And if the baby gets sick, the microbes in the mouth can backwash onto the nipple and change the formula. All of this goes on as this micro Jedi army works on our behalf, especially at the time of infant, because if you establish a healthy microbiome at that time, it can affect your health for the rest of your life. Because it's so important. We outsource up to 90% of our daily metabolic and chemical activities to the microbiome. We can get away with a measly 23,000 genes in our cells because we use the genetic information of the 3.5 million genes in the microbes living inside us. And that is a kingdom or a set of kingdoms that we don't want to mess with. We've only identified less than 1% of the trillion microbes on the planet. And yet we're already irreversibly changing what we don't fully understand, but we do know those that do understand the power of the microbiome are in awe of the wonder and majesty of its intelligence.
You know, it's interesting. I just wrote an article for my Substack a couple weeks ago on the microbiome and how that, you know, we know that the body has at least three of them. Now we've got the gut microbiome we talk about all the time. Then there's a skin microbiome. And then they were just amazed to find a brain microbiome with the microglia cells that, you know, we've got bacteria and stuff that cross the blood-brain barrier that are, or that, you know, we, in our nose and, you know, that goes up through our olfactory nerves into the brain all the time. And so the microglia are like the white blood cells, the macrophages out in the periphery that just are little garbage eaters that do that. So the brain's got its own microbiome. And there's probably more because this whole idea
of the mouth has it, the vagina has it.
They have and because they're just now, you know, thinking about, you know, antibiotics were first discovered and began used in the 1940s, and how we have polluted the earth and foods, and how they used to put Cipro and different things in the animal feeds all the time. And then they had to take that out because, oh my gosh, the animals would eat it. It would get into their meat. And oh my gosh, it would get into us.
Oh, isn't it all isolated and controlled and with boundaries?
Exactly. So we've got this mess that we've created with antibiotics to our microbiome. Now we've got this mess we've created with glyphosate. And now we're going to even have a mess created with horrible microorganisms that are going to, you know, mate with our own microorganisms and create whole new microorganisms that have never been there before. That's just terrifying.
Because it is so important. I mean, there's a bunch of groups around the world that have tried to stop the deregulation of gene editing generally for plants, animals, and microbes. But when I looked at it, I realized if you gene edit a cow, like they did, they had a hornless cattle. And they said, oh, it's perfect. And they did a peer-reviewed published article saying this shows that there should be no regulation on gene-edited animals because it's so perfect. They started growing out these cattle in Brazil to introduce them. And 2.5 years later, they found quite accidentally that there was genetically engineered bacterial genes that ended up in the cow in every cell, antibiotic resistant genes. So that could create massive antibiotic resistance in the products of the cow, like the, you know, the milk and all that. So they slaughtered those cows, et cetera. But it was 2.5 years into a program of building out a herd. In that 2.5 years, if you're creating genetically engineered microbes, you could have quadrillions and quadrillions and quadrillions of microorganisms already all around the world. So we realized that no one else was championing the microbiome. So we decided to pivot. And even though I can speak all day about the dangers of genetically engineered foods, we need to create laws and treaties to stop the genetic engineering of the microbiome. So I'm going to make an appeal here. It's not as popular a topic as what to eat in the food stores. And we have not been able to sustain our funding at our nonprofit. So today, I laid off a lot of our staff and cutting my own hours. And still, we are on the edge here. So if you'd like to make a donation, go to responsibletechnology.org and hit the donate button. And please do make a recurring donation. In fact, if you make $25 a month, you can join the self-care advocacy program where we've curated from our 20 years of education. You have modules and programs and a community to connect to. And if you're a healthcare practitioner, we have another community for them so that healthcare practitioners can use our materials for patient education, et cetera. So again, it's not expensive to be part of these communities, and we actually are looking for people to make much more generous donations, we'll take what we get. And right now I haven't been very good at asking, and it shows. So I'm being bold now because we had a staff meeting and the faces, four of those faces on the Zoom call will not be there again unless we can raise some money.
That's excellent. And thank you so much for being so bold as to bring that up, Jeffrey. Please mention again, tell them the web address again where they can go and donate, because this is the future of the world, people.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
We can talk about, you know, all the different things that you should and shouldn't eat. But if we stop, if something happens that we can no longer grow any food, it's even worse than what glyphosate has done over the last 60 years. I mean, it's even worse, if you can imagine. And so Jeffrey and his organization have been in this battle for more, you know, almost 30 years. And so supporting what they're doing, I am a big advocate for everything that's going on there. So tell again where they can donate to your organization.
Sure. It's responsibletechnology.org. It's a 501c3, so it's tax deductible in the United States. And hang out on the site. Take a look at the glyphosate residue database. Read, you know, look at the pets and GMOs site if you have pets to figure out why all of a sudden dogs are getting cancer at huge rates and how people have turned that around. Look at the seven reasons why gene editing is dangerous and unpredictable. It's just 6 minutes. Or don't let the gene out of the bottle is just 16 minutes. We keep it small. There's a lot of assets there. I've been doing this for 28 years now. When I gave you the bio, it was last year. That was so last year. So it's now 28 years.
Well, it's so important. You know, it's so frustrating to me that, you know, I can talk to people like you, or you and I have been friends for a long time, and I've supported your organization in the past. We'll do more of that in the future. And to get this out into our sizable audience, you know, hopefully that people will know, because people are more interested in watching cat and dog videos or 30-second videos on TikTok. You know, they've trained us well to not be engaged with important things that are going to save our planet for the future. You know, everybody's so concerned about this, the nonsense of global warming. And I know I'm going to take some heat for that, but seriously, it's nonsense of global warming. I've interviewed some wonderful scientists about that. But this is even so. Because people say, well, I guess we just have to start growing our own food. Well, what if you can't? What if the soil in your backyard just won't do it?
Right.
And it won't be able to do it? And what about if in your body, the new microbiomes come up and now you can't digest, absorb, assimilate, and you get colon cancer or liver cancer or some of those things. So this is so important. I'm glad that you were bold enough to stand up with your staff and do what you should have been doing all along. Jeffrey is asking for support because this is so amazing. On your, we've got just a few minutes left here. What is, I know we've talked about some really important things tonight. What is on your agenda for moving this information forward? I mean, I kind of giggled when you said you've only been able to talk to people on six continents. I kind of giggled and thought, you mean there's nobody in Antarctica you could have found to talk to?
No, I know. It's I can't get through to them, especially in winter.
That's really good. Well, so what's your agenda coming up for 2024?
Well, we're going to have to, we're going to be offering some courses. I just surveyed our list and hundreds of people want me to give speaker training or how to give your gifts to the world training or suggesting specific health products that I've come across. So we're going to do that. But something else is happening. I'm aware of consciousness as a driver for life on Earth. And that, you know, we can think about quantum physics and the field of the unmanifest field, the unified field is the source of everything. It's also the source of human consciousness. And I think that there are techniques that we've seen and whatnot to help develop human consciousness and create coherence in human consciousness. And when I think about collectively moving forward, there are times when there's a critical number of people that are spot on and driving the ship, so to speak, and that we've seen leaps of awareness and understanding. Now, the genetic technology is like no other. A single high school student could accidentally cause a cataclysm. Individuals, it's not like nuclear power that one person can, you know, accidentally build a nuclear reactor. It's one person with a $2,000 kit could actually cause massive damage to the planet. And so it demands a new relationship with nature now that we have such powerful technology. All living beings, all future generations, biology as we know it, is at risk. So we now have to shift our awareness and our consciousness around our role on the planet. We need to protect nature. We need to safeguard nature. Now, I'm thinking that that really is the golden egg, so to speak, of this issue. Because, like, you know, sometimes there's a diagnosis or a prognosis of a terminal ailment, and the person turns it around. They change their belief, they change their actions, and it becomes a blessing in their life. This is like the prognosis. We could, you know, end biological evolution as we know it. Let this be the blessing for human consciousness so that we get it. Now, for those listening, well, what can I do? Well, certainly you could support the effort financially and getting the word out. But if we're really talking about consciousness, shifting consciousness, it's taking in the knowing that as human beings now, we are protectors, safeguarders of nature, now that we can destroy all living, you know, can affect all living beings and all future generations. We need to own that ourselves without fear, but with clarity and enthusiasm, and to make that contagious. So I'm looking for, and I'm going to be coming out with a new book, and it's going to be focused more on consciousness and the quantum and all that. So I'll come back on and we'll talk about that when I've got something to offer there. But in the meantime, I'd like to say that the news is not all bad, because the threat is the kind of wake-up call that we can use to realign humanity, because life on Earth is at stake. And it sometimes takes that level of threat to change our belief system and change our decisions. And it's not other people doing it, it's every individual now that has the capacity. So it's, and it can last, the changes can last all future generations. So it forces us to think big. It has all the elements of rethinking our relationship with the world.
Jeffrey, that's beautiful. So tonight, I just want to make sure you all know this is Jeffrey Smith for responsibletechnology.org. Please go out and support his organization for what he's trying to get out. We will have you back because we've got so many different things that we can talk about.
Oh, yeah. Including
your coursework. I mean, after we're done here, I want to talk to you about that for just a minute. So I want to thank everybody for coming here tonight and joining us here on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. We are now, as of a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to be doing it all the way through 2004. These Brighteon shows that we produce on Monday nights will go up on drtenpenny.substack.com on Thursday. So it will be there for everybody to see and to share, so we're getting more traction on moving all of this information out to various different sites. So you can go to drtenpenny.substack.com on Thursday and re-listen to this. You can find it on brighteon.tv. You can re-watch it here. And with that, I want to thank you again for everybody for being here tonight. And I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible that I close all my pre-recorded and my live podcast with, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in trouble and be persistent in prayer. So until next week, next time, mark your calendars for being here with us on Monday night at 7 o'clock. In the meantime, lean into God, trust Him for everything. He'll never let you down. Thank you so much. Have a good evening and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out: Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.